Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. I'm Lance Kenmore, and you can contact me anytime direct on my cell phone at 509-727-8977. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. And of course, I always like to thank the station and everybody here for working to make this happen, and that is Mr. John McKay. John, how are you?
Well, maybe cooling off a little after earlier in the week.
Oh, my gosh. I tell you what, though, earlier in the week, those temperatures, my kids and wife and I got, I love the 8 to 8:30 bike ride when it's about 75 degrees still. I felt like we got our little first shot of summer there.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, the home buyers, too. I don't know if there's like a temperature differential between how much the phone rings to how sunny and nice it gets outside, but it definitely heated up the real estate side of things for sure. We have been busy, busy, busy.
Lance, did I see some new stats about listings out there? Is it down again?
Tom, I wasn't even going to bring those numbers.
Like, it's a scary number
to the show. It's really scary. For the amount of homes that are being sold and the listings that are still out there, I mean, we thought we were going to get back into the 600s, and we have still been flirting in the fives.
Wow.
And it's just... It's tough. We're looking at a 1.5 to a 1.3, depending on the day and the number of sold supply of homes, and that's really, really low. Mm-hmm. And so, in fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because instead of this week, we always like to start with a crazy celebrity real estate news story. But as I was looking for those stories, I came across something that was a little bit different, and that is best places for first-time home buyers. And actually, one of the things they rated that on was inventory availability. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, we did not make
We're not on the list.
We did not make that list. I was checking out some of the stuff on Zillow.com on their blog, and recently Zillow had released a study that looked at median home values, affordability, inventory, and cash buyer competition. So obviously, median home values coming in there is lower home values means buyers need less cash for a down payment to get into the housing market. Affordability, this is places where your mortgage payments will make up a smaller share of your income. And then inventory, obviously, more homes for sale means it's easier to find the perfect fit. So now, the number one, and this is what I wanted to bring to that news story, number one best place as rated on the Zillow study for first-time home buyers was actually Indianapolis, Indiana. You've got a median home value there of $130,200.
Wow.
And so that's a pretty low amount. And then because of that, that means that buyers end up spending about 11% of their income on their mortgage. Now, if you go on down the list and look at some other places that were like 10 and 11 on the list, you get to Naples, Florida was on there. They're spending 16% of their income on a mortgage, so less affordable. But the big thing in related to our local market that I wanted to talk about and that you brought up and just led me right into, I didn't even tell you to do that. Great job before
the
show.
No problem.
Is that inventory in these markets, Indianapolis is high. You've got inventory, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania was number two. And that is a high inventory market. Memphis, Tennessee, crazy. In fact, this was still shocking to me to see this. You're looking at a median home price in Memphis, $112,000.
Wow. And high inventory there as well.
And then average. They actually located that as average. And then Cleveland, Ohio, high. Rounding out the top five, Chicago has a high inventory right now. And this is what always shocks me about Chicago. And when I went to that conference with the top teams in the U.S., Amy Kite, now a friend of mine, great agent in Chicago, I expected her purchase price to be a lot higher. You know, you just think of maybe the high rises in main Chicago. But once again, and Amy's like, Lance, that is not the case. But once again, $193,000. So that's a little more like our market when you get to that $185 to $193. But she's also facing high inventory there in Chicago, and they round out the top five.
Well, some of these places you listed, with high inventory, it makes sense that they'd have lower prices. You know, if you got more homes to choose from, you can't just keep ratcheting up those sales prices.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the things is it's, you know, goes back to basic economics, supply versus demand. Mm-hmm. Lower supply with high demand, you're going to see those prices increase. And so we're definitely running into that in this market now. We've been talking over the course of the last 5 or 6 months about how crazy that was. And now is one of those times where we're actually seeing some big, big increase in appreciation in certain price points. And, you know, I got to tell you, one of the pick threes that I had prepared for this week is already gone. And just as an example of what's happening there, there is a model in West Pasco that Aho built for years. We all call it in the industry the 1092 because it's 1,092 square feet. It was sold to a lot of investors. A lot of people used it as rentals. And it was a great first-time homebuyer house and still is a very popular choice for first-time homebuyers. We have recently set records, two records, the last two that I have sold. One has gone for 165 and one's gone for 170. Hmm. And it wasn't more than 8 months ago when you could find plenty of those at 149.9. So, moral of the story is if you have an investment property, if you have a 1092 in West Pasco, or you're just want to take advantage of the lower interest rates right now, please give me a call because we can set records and get you the highest return on the 1092s right now than ever before. Mm-hmm. I mean, those prices. I remember the 1092, I've lived here my whole life.
Oh, it was 70,000, 80,000?
I was just going to tell you, there were huge billboards when they first came to town 15, 18 years ago, and those billboards were out on the freeway, and it was 89.9.
Wow.
Come on in. So if I could jump in the time machine, go back to, 1998, Tom, you and I would do whatever we possibly could
to buy as many of those as we possibly could.
So the guy that did, if he's ready to capitalize on that appreciation, please give me a call because there's some unique things we're doing out there. We have a list of buyers ready to go because of those ones that we have just sold in the last 2 weeks. We actually have 7 to 8 buyers ready to go at that price point because we've had them in multiple offers. So feel free to give me a call direct on my cell phone, 727-8977. If you want to put a plan together to help get those sold, get you into your next one, we would love to talk to you about that for sure. Other local real estate news came out this week. Company Evergreen that's been building apartments in town, launching and going to be building 94 high-end luxury units at Columbia Point. Hmm. So now we've got condos down there. You've got the new restaurants with Lulu. Lulu's down there. You've got the hotel. And on one of the last pieces out there, you're now going to see some rentals. So truly a pretty amazing mixed-use development that they wanted and executed on in the city of Richland. So congratulations to all the new development going on down there and some of those new amenities coming out down there. Tom, one of the things that we hadn't talked to, we're always looking for new topics, things that come up on the show that we run into, and I wanted to bring up, when you're going to sell a home, there is, in the state of Washington, there is an RCW, and that is 64.06, that says you have to fill out what's called seller disclosure statements, filling out information about the home. And that is a 6-page document that the seller is required to fill out to give to the buyers when they're selling real estate in Washington state. So a lot of times what happens is there's a lot of questions from seller. So what's on those disclosure forms? How do I answer those questions? What exactly is that about? So I thought, gosh, I don't know if we've ever really done a show on that disclosure statement and the impact of some of the choices that you make, why you own a home that is might come to roost when you have a disclosure statement later. So first of all, I wanted to read right off the Washington State website the actual RCW because there are some exemptions to that. And so it states that this chapter does not apply in the following transfers of real real property. So if there is a foreclosure or deed in lieu of foreclosure, you are not required to receive disclosure statement from that party. If you are gifting your property, because that would be a transfer of ownership still, but if you're gifting your property to a parent, spouse, domestic partner, or a child, you're not required to have disclosure forms because of that transfer, you know, basically interfamily there that's going on. If you have a transfer between spouses in connection with a marital dissolution, divorce type that's going on, you're not required to have disclosures there. And then if you are a personal representative of the estate of the descendant or by a trustee in bankruptcy. So you're the personal representative. Obviously, you come into town. Maybe you don't even live here. You've never lived in the property, but you're having to sign the papers to get that sold. Obviously, those people are not going to know much about the house.
All those make sense.
And so those are the cases when it is not required. And so that comes up a lot. And so a lot of times people are like, well, should I be concerned in those situations, in a foreclosure, or if it's an estate sale? Should I be concerned that I don't have those disclosures? Well, there is, from a real estate agent's perspective, there is a heightened level of concern that we should be thinking about. But the beauty of the disclosures and the Form 17 that people fill out is, in all actuality, even with those seller's disclosures, there should still be some heightened concern. In fact, I had highlighted just for the radio show to in preparation for it, the actual disclosure form that we use now still says, even with seller's disclosures, that for a comprehensive examination of the specific condition of the property, you are advised to obtain and pay for the services of qualified experts to inspect the property. So, yes, you can have a better feeling with the seller's knowledge and disclosure of the property, but it does not substitute a full-on inspection by architects, engineers, land surveyors, plumbers, electricians, specific people about the condition of the property.
Well, you never want to just take the seller's word for it. They have a vested interest in selling the property, right?
So, yeah, you're exactly right.
I hate to insinuate that someone may not always be truthful, but that inspector is going to make sure that they're double-checking to see if there's anything wrong.
You're absolutely right. So it's really interesting when you go through and start looking at some of these questions in here and what that means to you, not only as a seller, but what that means to the buyer also. Now, the specifics for filling out these instructions on this form are very, very specific. In fact, the instructions to the seller on the legal form state, please complete the following form. Do not leave any spaces blank. If the question clearly does not apply, properly check NA. If you answer yes to an asterisk item, please explain on attached sheets, because those are usually the major questions. So we see interesting types of things happen all the time on these disclosure statements. One of the questions on that form that comes up a lot that causes pausing by sellers is 4C says, have there been any conversions, additions, or remodeling? And your options are yes, no, don't know, or NA, not applicable. Tom, what do you think the follow-up question is to, has there been any conversions, additions, or remodeling?
If so, what was done?
If so, what was done? Yes. And then the second part of that question.
Did you get permits?
Did I get it right? 100%. Yes.
Do you have a bell or something you can ring, John?
Ding, ding, ding.
If yes, were all building permits obtained? I can't tell you, this question probably pauses sellers more often than not. I'll be having a seller fill out this form. We will be in their kitchen table. They will look up at me. They have a blank white look on their face. And the next thing out of their mouth is, Lance, what do you think here?
My buddies and I built that patio cover.
My buddies and I built that patio cover. It was during the winter, so it was dark a lot. And so
I paid him with beer and pizza.
We didn't get it, and I don't think we got a permit.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, that is an addition or remodeling. you're answering these disclosures. I mean, you have to answer these, truthfully. So, yeah, yes, there had been conversions, addition to remind. No, we didn't get the building permits. Would it behoove you to now go and make sure that you can get that permit, get that inspected? Absolutely. Part of filling these out with the sellers is so that we can head some of these problems off at the pass. Now, there are sellers sometimes that they just don't even care. They say, yep, I put that patio cover on and I did it and it's there. I'm selling the house, but I'm not doing anything about it. It is what it is. And then that's something that the buyer just has to decide if they're going to deal with, if their lender will actually even let that go through, if that will get caught when they do the appraisal. There's a lot of repercussions that can come up. And so that is one question in here that we run across all the time. So thinking ahead as a seller, if you're doing any sort of conversion or addition or remodeling that requires a building permit, please check to see if it requires a permit. And absolutely 100%, please obtain that permit. And then afterwards, any final inspections that are obtained. A lot of times people think, like you said, they just, my buddy's an electrician and I can knock this out on the weekend. If you ever plan on reselling that house, that is not always the best course of action, because it is going to come up and it comes right up in this disclosure form.
Now, especially important on manufactured homes. If you puncture that shell of that home and there has not been inspections, the lender will immediately decline that loan.
Yes, absolutely, Tom. You're absolutely correct. So it is, imperative in those situations that you have those done properly and with the right permits and then reinspected. Because in that manufactured home scenario, you're going to need L&I.
Correct.
Is the authority that's going to come back and grant that final inspection. And it'll make the transaction go so much smoother and might be the difference between, like you said, even keeping the transaction together in the mm-hmm. first place. So that's a big one that can come up. Another one that happens a lot of times is source of water for the property comes up. Here's where you're going to disclose in paragraph 2A, the source of the water, and it's either private or publicly owned water system. It could be a private well serving just the subject property, or sometimes sellers haven't even disclosed that it's a shared well. There might be some sort of agreement between them and the other parcel, and it's a shared well. So this is the section of those disclosures where all of that comes out, and then the buyer can get an accurate representation of what they're dealing with. I've only gone through, we're coming up against our first hard break. I've actually only gone through two questions on the six pages. I had to kind of narrow it down to some of the big ones that really affect decisions that sellers and homeowners make why they own a property. I always like to be thinking forward. I'm going to have to make a disclosure about this someday. What do I need to have documented to help me with that situation? When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about some other disclosures that people ask a lot of questions about. Water, flooding, deaths in homes. There's a lot of different things that may or may not have to be disclosed. We'll find out when we come back.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We kind of changed it up a little bit this week. We've been talking a little bit about disclosures in real estate, the seller disclosure statement, other types of disclosures that come up in real estate. And to kind of relate it back to the real life scenarios, we went over a couple before the break, and that's just at some point, if you're doing stuff that is probably, we'll say, not legal or not smart, meaning we've got, rogue additions, no building permits, those type of things. We actually run into it more often than someone would think. And it comes up at these home inspections, at these, when we're looking at these disclosure statements and the seller has to fill those out. So just went over some of the big ones before the break to hopefully solve some people and prevent some headaches when they do decide to sell. And just a reminder, sometimes people, you never know what's going to cause that sale. Maybe a neighbor moves in that they don't like. Maybe there's a medical issue. I think with the end game in mind of at some point I'm going to have to sell this house, a little advice up front can go a long way. Now we're going to check in with Tom Coyne at Umpqua on the lending side of things and see how things are going for him and get his take on things. Tom, how have you been?
You know, I'm fantastic. I see John's back to wearing his Packers hat after the draft last weekend.
Yeah, he's ready. That was a quick transition. He was not in baseball mode very long.
Just right back to the Packers.
Well, we still do the baseball stuff. But I just felt it was need to give him a little rest. And, well, you know,
yep,
I knew you were coming in today. So.
Knew we were coming
we
in.
We got nothing else to really look forward to in football for another, I don't know, 4 months or so. So, draft's over. I think the Hawks did pretty good. We definitely addressed some needs there. To be honest, I didn't care less about the Packers, so I don't even look at their draft.
Well, the Seahawks' offensive line was like a colander, so they drafted wisely.
Well, there's not much else to look at right now. I was telling somebody the other day, my daughter at her final soccer game, both teams that I like are out of the Stanley Cup playoffs. The Blackhawks, the Ducks are gone. I feel lost. I don't have anybody to root for right now.
I caught myself watching a baseball game, and I was actually mildly entertained by it.
Love baseball.
I think I'm just at this moment rooting for Tom Coyne and his team at Umpqua.
I appreciate that.
That's who I have to root for.
Well, then there's a lot to root for this last month, because I saw that we were the number two lender in the Tri-Cities for Benton and Franklin County last month.
That's awesome, Tom. Congratulations.
Well,
you've been helping a lot of our clients,
absolutely,
and I appreciate that.
Well, when I start talking disclosures, usually my clients' eyes start rolling back of their head, so I'll try to make this as easy and fun as possible so nobody turns down their volume here. But the first one I want to talk about, people ask, why do we need this? And it's called the 4506T, which is the request for tax return transcript. This is the best change I've seen since I've been in lending. It was, when I first started, people could hand us a W-2 or a tax return, and we have no way of validating that or verifying if it's real. And that was the income we went off of. Now this 4506T is a form that's signed. We then send it to the IRS, and it ensures that what you're giving us is what was filed with the IRS. This form has single-handedly, in my opinion, cut down on fraud and lending more than anything else. So if a lender requires this, that's why. We're just trying to make sure that what you're giving us is what was filed with the IRS. Second one that we run into from time to time is Social Security verification. This is important. Towards the end of the transaction, we're looking for these validations to come back from FHA or the IRS. And sometimes there will be no alerts to us on an application or a credit report that we may be looking at a fraudulent Social Security number. But this form saves us from closing this loan under someone else's social. So it's crazy, but it can happen. And this is one of those safeguards that's put into place so lenders can catch these sort of things. And I think it helps, and it helps prevent, again, fraud. Now, another form that people always have questions on is the appraisal waiver form. There's a rule that some senator, who's probably a genius out there, said, we have to wait 3 business days after we give you the appraisal before we can send your loan documents to escrow. Unfortunately, they've never gotten a call from Lance saying, why is my deal not closing on time?
Absolutely.
Otherwise, they probably wouldn't care about this rule. So we get this form signed on every transaction, and the form doesn't say that you're not going to get the appraisal before closing. It just says you don't mandate that I wait 3 days after I give you the appraisal before we can send your docs out. So we would lose a week if clients don't sign this. I've never had anyone not sign it. But it's important to know why we get it. And it's just because everything's on deadlines. And one thing has to come in before we can move on to the next process. And waiting those 3 business days would just be killer, and almost lose a week in a transaction. Now, we talked several months ago about some new rules called TRID that came out, and they came out towards the end of last year, and they revised the good faith estimate. It's now called the loan estimate, and the HUD settlement statement, which is now called the closing disclosure. Now, I think lenders and escrow companies and everyone has a pretty good hand on this, but one of the biggest changes on this is from the time that we issue the closing disclosure to the client, which is after we clear final underwriting, we have to wait 3 business days before the client can sign. So it has added, you know, roughly a week to every closing a transaction. And so I remember being able to close loans in 2 weeks, and it wasn't really a problem at all. But with the amount of appraisals or the turn time on appraisals right now and waiting for the closing disclosures, it's just not happening. So it has added time. But what I thought I'd go through is this loan estimate, and I'll just try to briefly skip through it. But the whole idea of the loan estimate was to give clients a really easy 3-page form to go through and know all the important details of your loan. So, of course, the first things it lists is your loan amount, your interest rate, your principal and interest payment, and is there a prepayment penalty or a balloon payment? That's right on the very first section. So very important information. You can see it right off the bat. Then it breaks down your total payment. So it breaks apart your principal and interest, your mortgage insurance, and then if your loan has taxes and insurance included. Now, one thing that I think is kind of silly that is kind of counterproductive in making this easier for people is that there are certain fees that are the seller's responsibility to pay. Now, I have to quote that to the client, these fees, and it makes your closing costs look higher than they actually are. But then we turn around and give you a credit from the seller to offset those higher fees. And clients say, well, that doesn't make it easier. And I say, well, I know, but that's the government, and they came out with this form, and so we just have to live with it. Someday it might get changed. But there are certain fees that we quote to you on your cost worksheet that the seller's fee to pay, and we turn around and give you a credit to offset that. Now, on the third page, this is where it gets kind of sad, is when you're looking at your total amount of payments and how much of that will go towards principal. I stress to every client, pay as much as you can on your mortgage. And even if you're increasing your payment by $10 on your auto pay or $15, all of that adds up. Because so very little portion of your payment goes to principal, especially on a 30-year loan, compared to interest. If you look at an amortization schedule, it's usually around year 14 of a 30-year loan that more will be going to principal than to interest. So always try to pay extra if you can. We go through these forms all the time. So if you feel like you're not getting good enough service or haven't gotten a good enough explanation from another lender and you're out there shopping for a loan, I'd be happy to sit down and chat with you and go through your options.
Tom, you bring up a great point. A lot of times, too, in this low interest rate times that we're in, and man, they've just been some screaming rates lately. A lot of times we're also looking at that where you said, yeah, in year 14 is the first time that that more is principal. Right now, with rates being in the low threes, it's for 15-year mortgages, there's an option to think, gosh, do I really want to go to year 14 and have that be the first time I'm even breaking over that 50% mark? Or do I want to be at year 14 and say, I'm paying off my entire home next year? Mm-hmm. So I think we're still in a unique point in time where you can have a 15-year mortgage, whether that's on your primary home or an investment property, and have those rates be extremely low.
Yeah, imagine if rates go up to 6% on a 15-year loan. I mean, that is far less affordable for somebody. And so it's a unique opportunity to get in with how low rates are and have an affordable payment. And getting your house paid off in 15 years really sets anyone up very well and their family and really financial freedom.
Yeah, great information, Tom. Thank you so much for getting us that information. Before I hit a few more of the disclosures, I wanted to get in our pick three, which, as I talked about at the top of the hour, is really only a pick two, because the third one was one of those 1092 square foot West Pasco homes that has already sold, like within hours, basically. So very, very hot marked on that. But some other great homes that we have just put on the market. Two very, very fantastic upper end homes. Pick number one, this is 616 Melissa Street in Richland. This is a house that has space for everyone. This is a 7-bedroom, 4-bath. It's a Rambler with a basement plus a bonus room. Great neighborhood in Brantingham Heights, right there in South Richland, right off of Keene. 4,539 square feet. Just absolutely gorgeous view, spacious kitchen, big island. You've got your private master suite on the main level, really a spa-like master bath, absolutely gorgeous, a 19x16 bonus room on the upper level, and then in the daylight basement, you've got another family room, wet bar, 4 bedrooms, and 2 additional bathrooms. Mm. Hard to find a house that has that many beds and baths, and coming in at $469,900. So absolutely fantastic, large home. Now, pick number three, on the other side of the river, into Pasco. This is one of those rare Court Street properties that comes up very, very close to the river. And this is 10008 Court Street in Pasco. This is a custom built executive home, 4-bedroom, 3-bath, with just an absolutely gorgeous river view. Once again, another home, 4,657 square feet. You've got raised coffered ceilings, gorgeous hardwood floors, very, very elegant detail. details in this house. Kitchen opens up to the family room. Huge, huge, cool custom home feature. It is a, it's basically a window wall. You've got just floor to ceiling, high, high windows in this house. Gorgeous, gorgeous view. French doors open up into the den office. Tons of built-ins there. You've got an absolutely fantastic master suite that has that wraparound balcony that gives you some of those amazing river views. 24 by 20 bonus room with a wet bar, large mud room, wine storage, and then a great big lot that gives you absolutely tons of outdoor living space. It's got a custom six-hole putting green and waterfall in the backyard. And in fact, we're going to actually have that house open, and that is on Tuesday from 11:30 to 1:30. We're holding a broker's open there, but if you're in the area and wanted to stop by and check out this home, we definitely invite you to check that out. Fantastic home, and that's coming in at $595,000. And for a big custom built that close to the river, there's not that many lots that get you there. That is a great, great value. So a few more highlights before we run out of time here on the disclosure statement that sellers fill out that is important. Some of the other questions that come up a lot, that comes up, has the roof leaked within the last 5 years? That's an important one. So the seller then needs to elaborate on that. Did they put on a new roof? Did they patch? Was there an issue? Here's where you find out if there was any sort of ice damming that might have happened in the winter, shingles that got blown off. It's just a good piece of information to have so that when you have a home inspection, they can look into what the remedies was. And the other one that comes up a lot is, has the basement flooded or leaked? You know, if basements flood or leak, what was the cause of that? How was the problem fixed? And then once again, here's where we come up with the proof issue of that. If you are in a home and you have your basement flooded or leaked and you have a restoration company come in and do the restoration, please do not lose those receipts. Having that process documented and what was done by what contractor will help you get around that, make proper disclosures when it comes time to resell. The other thing that pops up a lot that we have happen usually that buyers are looking at and unsure of, and that is there any property or fixtures on the property that are leased? And sometimes people are like, well, how does that come up? What do you mean?
Propane tank.
Propane tanks are a big one. Is that propane tank out there under a lease agreement between the seller and another company? So you see the house, you look at the house, it's attached to the ground or bolted down. You see a propane tank there running the fireplaces and maybe the stove, and then you close on the house, and those leases, if they don't get properly transferred, the company comes and picks up that tank and it's gone. So you need to know if that is a leased fixture. Security systems are another big one that we come up with. A lot of these systems, they install and put in the hardware and then make it subject to a 2 or 3 year lease. So they don't actually own that hardware. And if that lease gets canceled, there's going to be penalties. So figuring out the lease on security system tanks. Satellite dishes are another big one that we see come up a lot. So these are some, I just touched on the many of the many questions. We really only had time today to get through 4 or 5 of those questions. There is actually some really fun ones that come up in the environmental section that, as you can imagine. So we do not have time to go over all those today. If you're a seller filling out those disclosure statements, you have questions about that, please talk to either your current agent or your legal counsel. An attorney can answer the very, very intricate legal aspects of those questions. Part of the deal, though, and a lot of times where this gets missed, is those for sale by owner transactions. And so if somebody's in a transaction like that, curious about what's going on, and might need to take the next step in representation, feel free to go to our website, kenmoreteam.com, shoot us a message, an email. We're doing a lot of those evaluations right now for people, and we would love to help you out. Tom, on the lending side, pre-approval letters, refinances, how can people get a hold of you guys?
Start at my website, tomcoinhomeloans.com, or call anytime, 783-7300.
And we'll be right back here next week.
Right here on News Talk 870.